the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. A very fun show for you that is thematic, as we're starting to do more and more these days. Thank you, Martha, for pulling themes together for us. This week, we are talking about kind of that concept of ring by spring and planning weddings. And we know many of you are now engaged. There are tons of people that are engaged. Can I just say here at Focus on the Family, everyone is getting engaged, except for me, but that's okay, because God's sovereign. But we will be helping, first of all, a listener in our inbox during the show with approaching a friend, really, who I guess now has a male roommate, and she just thinks that's inappropriate. And so what should she say, if anything? That will be our inbox, and Candace will be here for that. Our culture segment, we're going to talk with a couple of the guys from our counseling department, very, very fun guys, who are going to help us, actually help the men deal with marriage prep. And they're going to be talking about, there's a book that they contributed to called The Smart Groom's Answer Guide that is published by Focus on the Family. And there are some fun things in there that we will be discussing. But right now for our roundtable, we are going to discuss wedding details, specifically as they relate to the wedding ceremony. And many of you know that this was a while ago, it was last year, I think, that I wrote a post for the blog called So You Think You Can Dance Down the Aisle. And it was about that J.K. wedding dance, the one that has had multi-million views, the couple in Minnesota, hey Minnesotans, that decided that they were going to come on down to Chris Brown's Forever in the church, and then the pastor was just like, okay, well, let's get started, after they did that. So we kind of threw out the question of, was that appropriate? Is that really fun and spontaneous? Is it inappropriate, irreverent, whatever, and you all weighed in. Well, that conversation actually prompted just a general discussion on what are some of those things that people consider negotiable or non-negotiable when it comes to wedding ceremonies. And we pretty much say that when it comes to a reception, there's a lot that goes. I mean, there's a lot that's okay. Within reason, you know, let's remain scriptural. However, for ceremonies, there are some very specific opinions and very differing opinions on what is okay and what isn't okay. And there are some gray areas there too. So we want to discuss that today, and I think we're going to have some fun with it. So first of all, I want to welcome back Doug Tharp. Doug, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Doug is the director of young adults at Village 7 Press here in Colorado Springs, the church that I attend, and a fun guy. He has not yet had to do any wedding things for me, as I did say, but he has helped and assisted and performed a number of weddings for folks here and around. So very glad to have him. We also have Mike Hallsmith. Mike, welcome.
Thank you, Lisa.
Many of you remember Mike. He's been on the show before, and he just got married.
Yeah.
Give us the date. How long's it been now?
March 5th. It's been just about 2.5 weeks.
Wow. How's it going? Is it still holding?
Oh, yeah, good. Of course.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. That's good. Marriage is great. I'm glad to be on this side.
All right. So a newly wed. Andrew Hess is back. Andrew actually married, or performed, I shouldn't say married, but, you know, performed the ceremony for Mike and his wife, Lexi. So, Andrew,
great to be here. It's good to be here.
Otherwise, it was good to be there. Andrew, I like calling him brother.
It's good to be here.
So, so he is here. And then we also have Katie Porter. Katie, welcome.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks.
Hey, hey. Katie's also been on the show here as part of our Sanctity of Human Life area, our adoption and orphan care area. So very great to have you. And Katie is planning a wedding. So she's not yet on this side of marriage, but getting there.
Right. Yep. So we've been engaged since the beginning of February, and we're getting married on June 18th. So.
All right. Yeah. Which is my birthday. I'm very excited about that. That you picked that date
for
that reason.
Yes, I told Lisa that is exactly why we picked that date. Since it's her birthday, we knew we had to celebrate in a big way. So
that is very true. That is awesome. So that's a good date. So, all right, well, let's go ahead and jump in here. First of all, I want to talk to Mike and Katie and just generally throw out the idea of, okay, weddings. Mike, you obviously had to go through this process, and I'm sure much of it you were like, thank goodness Lexi has to deal with the details on this, but you certainly had input on it. And then Katie, you're probably in the just madness of getting this thing on the table. June, it's coming up quickly. So what considerations have you thought of when you first thought, whether it was years ago or whether it was months ago or whether you're just now thinking of some things, when you thought, I want to craft a wedding ceremony that is going to represent me and my significant other, what does that entail?
Okay, do you want to go first?
Sure. Well, it's been one consideration for us is that we'll have only been engaged for 4 months. So it limits some of the planning, which I think is good to some extent, because then you don't have time to obsess about it, change your mind 15 times. It's kind of like we're making a decision and we're going with it. So that's been good for us in one respect. And actually, we've got most of the big planning done for all of our wedding, and we're just moving forward. I travel a lot for work too. So it's been one of those, okay, let's just make decisions, let's plan it. But we've also put a lot of emphasis on understanding that this will be a fun day. I have a lot of family from out of town, and my extended family hasn't met his extended family. And so it'll be a really fun time to all be together. But at the same time, at the end of the day, we'll be married. And that's the exciting part. And we're more focused on, okay, what happens on Sunday versus on Saturday? And so where do we go from here? And so making it a time when we can really enjoy each other, enjoy our family, but not having all the stress and not having all the expense and not doing some of the crazy things that other people have, because we know the focus, while this will be a fun time, is really the long term. So, we started doing pre-engagement counseling, which is now transferred to premarital counseling, because it's a 40-hour workshop, and so we just couldn't get it all done before we got engaged. Uh-huh. But those are the kind of things that we're investing time in before we actually even get to the ceremony, because we recognize that it's just not all about that day. So yeah, we've just taken time to say, okay, how does this day though honor the Lord and honor our relationship and the commitment that we're making and the blending of two families, and how do we honor those people who've been close to us, but maybe not do all the extra things that people think, no, maybe you should do this. Well, you know what? It's our wedding, and we don't want to include 14 people if we don't have to. And, we want to talk to those people who are really close to us and have them stand with us and support us as we make this decision. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think you're right on. You have to start with, it is the Lord's day. Mm-hmm. You honor him first and foremost. And then like Lex and I, Lex, her mom and her mom's best friend, Sherry, they planned out. I mean, I had very little input into the planning of the wedding, and thankfully.
Well, let's be honest, it was in Texas.
Texas,
so women, they just do their own
thing. They take it and run with it. it was really good, because Lex and I sat down, we're like, okay, these are the non-negotiables. These are the things that we want in our wedding as a testimony to God's goodness in our lives. Mm-hmm. And we actually had that opportunity to sit down. Andrew is a good friend of mine. Thank the Lord that he was able to perform the wedding. We sat down with Andrew and we talked through kind of these are the things that we want. I'd been to a lot of weddings where when I watched the communion section of the wedding, I would see either the groom or the bride just go for the communion right away without considering the other person in which they're engaging in this communion before Christ. And so I wanted, when Lex and I did communion, I wanted it to be me serving her first before serving myself, identical to the way Christ serves the church. And I saw that along with the gospel presentation and the foundation of what marriage is in the ceremony to be a representation of Christ, of God, of what he is doing in the lives of Lex and I. And I had a mentor, Mark Tedder, a good friend of mine. He said, my wife and I are praying that you and Lex have a holy moment in that ceremony where you experience the presence of God to the point where that is the moment of we are one, we are being joined together before Christ, before these people, before God. I would probably say I had about three or four of those moments during the ceremony, and Andrew he did a spectacular job, definitely speaking the words of God during that ceremony. So,
yeah, that's good. Did you, Andrew, before you agreed to marry Mike and Lexi, did you sit down and say, okay, I mean, did you kind of have to put your stamp of approval on stuff, or did you kind of just trust them to do what they were doing?
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to do if you're going to perform a wedding. And with Mike, like, we're such good friends that we've had conversations where I knew where their heart was regarding, the Lord. And so knowing that they, want to honor God and want to serve him and believe in the oneness that God does when two people get married, we really didn't talk through like, okay, you need to sign off on these things. I mean, it was just, I just kind of knew going forward. But I do think there are a few of those things, that a couple recognizes that this isn't just, that God is the main player in a wedding. That it's not two people committing to each other or somebody officiating it, as much as God is making two people, one flesh. And, you know, the Bible talks about that and the mystery of what is marriage. And so I wanted to make sure that, you know, anytime that I do a wedding, that the couple gets that, you know, that, and I mean, Jesus even referred to that. I mean, it was first mentioned in Genesis. Jesus refers to it. Paul refers to it in the scriptures. And so really trying to make sure that they understand, you know, this is serious. Even in the midst of a celebration, there is this seriousness where God is doing a great work. He's doing an invisible work, but he's doing a work between mm-hmm. the couple.
Well, it used to be, I mean, it's interesting how much wedding ceremonies have evolved, because it used to be that you just stood up at the end of the service and the pastor, as kind of like a tack on, would kind of, you know, pull the couples forward that were going to get married, and they would get married and then everyone goes off kind of on their own. And it really was part of the worship service. And now it's become a whole separate event. Doug, I want to pull you in. So what, you know, you, like I said, you've done a lot of weddings and stuff. What have you kind of seen as your initial, when you first sit down with a couple, what are some of the things that you go over and that you talk through?
Yeah, it's been interesting. Some of the premarital counseling I've done has been for very extreme, you know, kinds of couples. So on one hand, you know, I'll have a couple that I taught back when they were high schoolers, and they're still really young, and they're still trying to figure out what they want to do. On the other end, you know, I've had two 39-year-olds who have both been divorced, who are kind of living together already, and this is, they're going to do justice of the peace, and they're just getting counseling because someone told them they needed to, kind of thing. And so sitting down with, when you have two extremes like that, it's very interesting to think through, why are you even doing this, and what are you trying to, you know, say when you have this ceremony? And what I've noticed is that it does seem to kind of be a culture of, it's my day, either as a couple, or it's my day for the bride, and what I want goes and how I want goes. And I think it's really important to try to think, to take them through steps and say, here's why we do these things. And there's a real purpose. There's a real value. You know, it's a covenant between, not just between the two of you, between God and you guys. It's a picture of Christ in the church. As Andrew pointed out, it's all throughout Scripture. And so I really like the phrase. There's a phrase that talks about that a wedding ceremony needs to be truthful on all levels. And it's not just a sense in truth as in the words you say, but it's truthful in the actions that go on. Mm-hmm. And so when people start to want to do things, I don't think it's always necessarily black and white, but what are they trying to communicate, and how does it glorify God in this, you know, basically worship service that is supposed to bring him glory before the couple?
Yeah. So we have a lot of, you know, folks out there who probably are planning weddings. Of course, Katie is as well. And I think, you know, in talking about some of the particulars, it's interesting to see some of the differing perspectives and the motivations behind them. So, okay, Mike, you referred to you guys doing communion as a couple. You mm-hmm. didn't open it up to the whole congregation.
Correct.
Was that something that you had always planned on doing, or was it something that just kind of came up and you'd seen it in other weddings and you were like, hey, this might be kind of cool?
I think it was something that we always planned on doing. We knew that for that moment, that was us tasting of that sacrifice together. I mean, everyone was watching, and hopefully people were engaging with that communion in their own hearts. I think that was also the opportunity to show what Christ's sacrifice was to the unbelievers, because both Lex's family and mine, I mean, there are unbelievers on those sides of the family. So, it was an example.
So what, Doug, weigh in here a little bit, because there are definitely some church traditions where doing communion as part of a wedding ceremony is not okay. Why is that?
Yeah, that's a great question. The way that some churches, such as a lot of the Reformed churches, the Presbyterian churches, view communion and baptism, you know, as sacraments, and that there are seem to be very clear indications of Scripture as to what's to accompany those sacraments. And so with communion, what we see is that, you know, there's things that need to accompany that. And so we're not actually opposed to doing communion in wedding ceremonies, but that communion is always accompanied by the preaching of the word. And then we also talk about fencing the table, you know, where we here's what communion's about, and, you know, if you're not a believer, you shouldn't take it, condemnation up on yourself, so kind of those kinds of things.
Yeah. Which, and if you do it in a wedding, could take you 20 minutes to clarify for everyone that may have wandered in off the street.
Yeah, so trying to explain it, you know, that can be problematic. And then also, both communion and baptism are community events. You know, you always see them celebrated as a people of God coming together. Mm-hmm. And so we don't practice private communion at all. And so, again, would not be opposed to doing it in a worship service, in a wedding ceremony. But if you're doing that, you know, yeah, how do you communicate, especially if you've got a lot of non-believers in town, and what are these guys doing with that stuff up there? And, you know, are you gonna fence the table? Are you going to, you know, do you have to preach the word separately from just the word that you give in the homily? And so there's so much that goes into it that a lot of times it's just, okay, you know, this is probably not the place for it, or we're going to make it very intentional and do it upright.
Okay. Okay, interesting. Any thoughts on that, Katie? Have you guys thought of if you're going to incorporate that? Or?
Well, we haven't planned out our wedding down to all the specifics yet for the ceremony. We're meeting with the pastor here in a couple weeks to talk through more of that. We've had just the first conversations with him. He and his wife actually are best friends of my fiance's parents, so they're well connected with the family too, so it's not someone that's off the street or anything, but they have the same kind of rule that the communion is served to the whole congregation, so they're fine to do it because they do view the ceremony as a worship service, and so they are kind of particular on the, you know, what we need to see the music list. If you're going to write your own vows, we do need to see them beforehand and those kinds of things. And if you want to do communion, fine, but we need to plan ahead because we will serve it to the whole congregation. We won't do it just as the couple because we believe this is a worship service and it should be open for everyone. So we haven't made the decision whether or not we will or not, but both of us come from pretty strong Christian families, so I think there's, you know, a few unbelievers here and there, but for the most part, strong Christian families. So we've yet to decide that, but there are some of those kind of things that we're thinking about. How do we make sure that this service really honors the Lord as a worship service and not a glorifying Katie and Cooper service where we just get to be the ones that everyone's excited about?
Yeah, which is interesting because that's another point that people try to kind of put their own little stamp on things is by utilizing music, or I mean, I've even heard of people like having video clips in the ceremony. I know, Doug, had you had the option, you would have had Lord of the Rings.
Yes, absolutely.
In your own wedding, but someone must have nixed that. So a lot of those kind of like cultural references to the point of, you know, like I said, you know, that example of the JK wedding dance, dancing down in your recessional and stuff. What do you guys think about that?
I think that can be done tastefully, especially when they're recessing. You know, I mean, Mike and Lexi played the Josh Turner song, "Would You Go With Me?" And it was just kind of like, it just kind of set that tone of like, you know, it was a fun song. And I, you know, I never even thought like, oh, wow, I mean, should they do that? I think generally to save as much of that for the reception as possible, you know, the reception is when, you know, the party in breakout mode. But I think in the ceremony itself, you do want to remember, you know, God is here and He is working. He is doing something. And so you want to be careful that everything you choose to do and everything you choose to say is honoring to Him and recognizing who He is. And so I do think that, you know, some of the videos that I've seen, you know, I wonder, you know, are the people that are watching that wedding getting that God is doing a work here? And I would probably suspect maybe not, but.
Or do they feel their reception's already begun before the ceremony's even started? Mm-hmm.
And I think there are ways you can make the ceremony very personal. I mean, I feel like Cooper and I are doing that. He really wanted the guys to wear cowboy boots. He's in law school in Wyoming. He has cowboy boots. He loves them. Great. I'm happy. They all got black cowboy boots. They're so excited about them. And it's kind of a personal touch for them, but it's not detracting in any way to the meaning of the ceremony. I love bright colors. And today's actually an exception, but most days I joke that I'm dressed like a bag of Skittles because I wear so many colors all at the same time. So our wedding colors are dark purple, bright orange, and bright blue, which kind of sounds ugly, but it looks really pretty, trust me. So we're doing things like that with it. That's kind of me as all those colors. And the cowboy boots with a suit or with a J. Crew sweater is him. So, okay, that's what he's going to do. And so we'll have some of those elements, but not to a point where that's all people will notice, or that's all they'll focus on or remember.
You're not coming down as Princess Leia.
Right, no. I'm not coming down as Princess Leia.
It's not going to be like the crossing of the lightsabers. Yeah.
Well, and even that, part of it's just my own personal preference, but I don't have a huge fancy gown. I'm not planning a big headpiece. I'm not, you know, my dress was actually a bridesmaid's dress that comes in ivory. It doesn't come in white because it's bridesmaids, but, you know, I mean, it's just more of a simple dress. It's not, I'm not trying to be so extravagant and act like someone that I'm not, just because it's my wedding day. Mm-hmm. And since I tend to have more of that personality, it's just going to be a little more simple and laid back. And we're doing fake flowers at the reception so we can save money and just things like that, that it's kind of low key. It's about a celebration and about the joining of our lives, but less of a production.
I think it's important on that day to remind each other what the day is about, because it is very easy as you're ramping up to that day, as friends and family are coming into town. Like for us, for Lex and I was down in Texas, and I haven't seen a lot of these friends for a while. And it's the sense of like this day is becoming more and more about me, more and more about me. And to slow down, and even if it is a moment, you know, the day before the wedding, to look at each other and say, remember, this day is not about us. It's about honoring the Lord. Mm-hmm. And at all possible, we need to step aside and allow the Lord to be glorified in this, mm-hmm. because He is the creator of marriage, and He is the one to be honored and glorified in the midst of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because you have, in fact, I was just talking to someone the other day who talked about her wedding, and she said, well, I had this idea and it was relatively simple until my mother-in-law stepped in, and then she just like took over the whole thing. And so between that, you know, other members of the family, their mm-hmm. input, and then just general ideas that you have or fun things you want to do. I mean, Doug, I'm sure you've had to run interference on that before. Like, how do you negotiate stuff like that, where you do say, you know, really, yeah, you're not going to be able to throw down this hip hop song, or you're not going to be able to, you know, your mother-in-law needs to not come in dressed like a peacock or something right. like that.
Or Princess Leia. Yeah, that's a great question. I think really as the pastor officiating the ceremony, you have authority there, and that's important. Hopefully you know the couple already from premarital or mm-hmm. even pre-engagement counseling, which I think is fantastic, by the way.
I second that.
So if you know them already, then you're already going to be able to speak into their lives. And I think if they are willing to come to you in the first place, that if it's something like the JK wedding dance, you know, mm-hmm. kind of thing, you're able to really ask good questions instead of just coming down and saying, no, that's stupid. You know, you're able to say things like, so what are you trying to communicate with this? You know, mm-hmm. and pointing to things like the whole point of the bride coming in on her father's arm is to communicate the, you know, you're leaving, you're with him, you're with your family, and then you're leaving, you're cleaving, and then when you get married, you're weaving, right? So you can communicate things like that. They sound really fun, and people are like, oh, that's wow. great. And then honestly, we're also able to be the bad cop when it comes to things like families. It's not always easy, but ultimately you can stay in and say, you know what, we're doing this wedding, I'm officiating it, they're the ones that are in the ceremony, and this is what we're doing. And you can do that in a winsome and attractive way. But that's really our role. And I think Andrew would probably second, yeah. you know, is we're there to protect the ceremony as far as, is it glorifying God, but also to protect the couple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I one of the things that I do is when I meet with the couple, I ask them to try to have all the major decisions made a week before the ceremony. Because, you know, as you get down to those last minutes, all these are the last, you know, that last week, all these last minute details pop up, and you don't want to be thinking about, oh, wait, what are we going to do in that, and how would we decide that? And so all the weddings I've done, I've kind of run the rehearsal and just kind of said, here's what we're going to do. And I think that helps because, you know, sometimes the moms will say, well, I thought we were going to do this. And mm-hmm. instead of putting the bride on the spot, you know, this is her weekend. And sometimes brides don't want to make decisions the night before their wedding. You know, I can just say, well, you know, I've talked to Lexi and here's what she wanted, or I've talked to whoever. And so I think, and that didn't happen with Mike and Lexi's wedding, but I think that, you know, we can help plan. And I even try to ask good questions. Like when we met before Mike and Lexi got married, I asked several questions just saying, you should decide this, you should decide this. And so that they kind of know, here's what we want. And if I know what they want, then I have no problem, you know, like Doug said, saying, here's kind of the vision of the couple. And then, yeah, then I can kind of help.
Just be enforcer. And
yeah, yeah. And just, you know, if you know, the mother-in-law, grandmother-in-law, or, you know, yeah. aunt or something says, oh, we always do this type of thing. Sorry. I can say, yeah. Well, not anymore.
So what is, speaking doll. Of the officiant, another thing that's popular here, and certainly in Colorado, you can marry yourselves. You don't even have to have anyone. You can go on the top of Pikes Peak if you want and say whatever you want. And as long as you sign the paper, you're going to be recognized. What any concerns about that, obviously, if you're moving into a Christian ceremony?
Yes.
Yeah, huge, there are huge concerns.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the thing that is that belittles is the role of God in that wedding. And the wedding is a great opportunity to share your beliefs about marriage and about faith and about the Lord with those people that you're closest with. And so to do it in kind of a private setting like that, where it's just you two and maybe some close friends, I think, you know, I'm all for, you know, doing a ceremony out in nature somewhere or something. But I think, you know, it is an opportunity to kind of proclaim and to say, you know, here's what we're about, and here's what we believe about what we're doing. And there's also some accountability there, you know. Right. As a couple stands before a lot of their friends and family, those friends and family now have seen them publicly before God commit their lives to each other, to make a covenant till death do us part. And so there's some accountability that, you know, we haven't done this behind closed doors or, you know, out in the middle of the desert or something, but we've done this in front of those people we care about most. So,
Yeah. And I think what it really comes down to is we live in such an individualized culture that we think that, you know, we live in a vacuum essentially. And if you look at scripture, I mean, how often, and the answer is almost always, do events take place in the community of believers, Old Testament and New Testament. Mm-hmm. And the idea that whenever they celebrate these things together, whether it's the feast of the Old Testament or being given the law at Mount Sinai or, you know, the formation of the church, you know, at Pentecost, if you want to start there. I mean, all of these things happen in a community of believers, and that we believe that marriage should be the same. We do it together. We do it, you know, I like the idea of accountability. And for those who are unbelievers there, it's a great opportunity to hear the gospel too. Mm-hmm. And the couples living out the gospel as the symbol of, you know, Christ loving his church. So because of all that, I think it's very important. That's not to say you can't do it in nature, but you have more of a, is it a private matter or is it a community event? And it should be a community event.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there's also that, you know, to think of those that have walked with you in your journey. And I've had a couple of friends who have been adamant about eloping. And I think that once it happened, you know, it was kind of like, wow, you know, the rest of us were like, we like prayed with you for like 7 years about that situation. Yeah. And now we were just kind of like left out, you know? And so I think there is that element of it being marriage as a community project, you know, and it is done, you know, in the spirit of Christian community. And I think that it's important to remember, to go back to that day and say, I remember when you made that covenant and I will now stand with you as you are fighting for your marriage 10 years down the road or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's an important element.
Yeah, the first wedding I did, actually, the couple built that in where they had the audience stand and kind of commit to the couple that they would, you know, watch over them and support them and encourage them. And I thought I hadn't seen that before, but it was really touching, you know, that these people haven't come just as participants, but they're people that have come and said, you know, we love you guys and we're excited about this new phase of your lives and we're here for you. You know, if you need anything, call us. And I think that is powerful, you know, that community aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cooper and I have been intentional about who we involve in the wedding and in what aspects. And when we thought about who would we want to officiate our wedding, we said, well, we'd prefer it be someone who knows us, first of all, but who also we see as kind of a mentor and someone who's going to shepherd our relationship. And so it wasn't just the random pastor, we know friends who are ordained, but we thought, well, we'd like to have someone who is more the mentor rather than a peer. And how do we include the bridesmaids and groomsmen who are closest to us, who have walked with us? I mean, some of my girlfriends, I'm not old by any means, but I didn't get married right out of college either. And so I've got girlfriends who've walked with me through these years of singleness, who've prayed, and those are the girls that I want to stand up there. And I didn't have every girl whose wedding I've been in, and I didn't have every girl I've known since high school or middle school or elementary school. And we just had to say, you know what, these are the folks that have stood with us for so long.
You on Facebook.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Too bad for that. Right. Okay, whatever. Now you know who your real friends are.
Yeah, but we wanted those people who were committed to saying, no, we support you as a couple. We've supported you as an individual. We support this union. We're here with you moving forward, too. It's not just a short-term thing. So,
and actually for Lex and I as well, in choosing the groomsmen and the bridesmaids and the officiant, totally the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who are these guys that have walked through some of the darkest days of my life and they've prayed with me and they've, you know, hashed these things out. And for Lex, the girls, and then for Andrew, it was kind of a no-brainer.
It was a no-brainer for me, too. I was happy to say yes.
Oh, well, that's cool. All right. Well, good thoughts, you guys. Hopefully this will be helpful to those of you out there who are kind of navigating this path right now, moving ahead, and, you know, and to not think of it, I think, as, you know, something that's going to make or break, you know, your marriage. I mean, but it's just good things to think about and stuff, and just fun stuff, ways to, again, really keep it meaningful and keep it special, but to remember, I think, and it's only been in recent years that I think it's really been hammered home to me that, wow, remember, this is a worship service. It is about the Lord. And, you know, don't get so caught up in the knot and all the other magazines and stuff that you're reading and everything that you
do. Those are helpful.
Forget that. They
can be helpful. Although there are times I read them and I think, no, I don't want to do that. Yeah. It says, you should do this. I don't want to.
So then you just say, no. I'm
right.
Do
yeah,
it.
Put your foot down.
So, well, good thoughts. We'll keep following Mike and Lex, and we'll look forward to hearing about Katie's wedding when it happens on my birthday. Very exciting stuff. So thanks, you guys, for being part of the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
everyone. Welcome to this week's culture segment. Very privileged to have with me in the studio this week two of the counselors from our counseling department. Want to introduce James Grosbeck. James, welcome.
Well, good to be here, Lisa.
Very fun to have you. He's a first-timer on the show, so we'll have to be kind to him.
Absolutely.
Not too kind, though, because we know I'm just incapable of that. So we'll be asking him some tough questions. And then we have Danny Huerta back with us. Danny, welcome.
Thanks for having me here.
Good to have you.
It's exciting to have James with us.
I know. It's kind of like a little twofer, so that's good. And you guys, now no one person is responsible for any crazy answers.
For things that are said, that's right.
Exactly. You'd be like, I think you may have said that. I can't quite remember.
I'll blame it all on James.
Yeah. Well, very fun topic this week because, as I said, introducing the roundtable, we're kind of talking about marriage prep and wedding prep and kind of all that entails. We are now in spring, heading towards May and June, the big marriage months.
Yeah. A lot.
You know, both of you guys have gotten it done, though, right? So you
we've gotten it done a few years ago. Okay. James, you a little bit longer than me?
Yeah, we got it done in the spring.
Okay. In the spring. Of what year? How many years have you been married?
Oh, gosh, what, 45 years, maybe?
Word.
That's not I've been alive, James.
So you've got...
it's a long time.
So you've got some time and experience.
It's been very difficult for my wife.
Okay.
Wasn't there a flood back then?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's because it wasn't because you hadn't helped, you hadn't contributed to this book yet for your wife and been, you know, had allowed yourself to avail, you know.
Well, sure.
Yourself
yeah.
of all that info. And Danny is married as well, but
I
not
am.
For as long.
No.
So he's still muddling.
We're going on 13 years.
Okay, yeah. That's good. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you guys, our counseling department and our counselors have contributed to, actually, it's two different books, The Smart Grooms and The Smart Brides Answer Guides. You guys are going to be talking to the grooms today, or potential grooms, giving them some helpful tips on moving towards marriage, moving towards a wedding, but ultimately moving towards marriage, really, because let's be honest, that's longer.
Right.
And just some of the you can just kind of like claim to have blacked out during the wedding. I think most guys can. They're like, I'm not sure what happened. Somehow we came out married.
It's kind of a flash.
Right. Exactly. Right. But when it comes to the actual marriage, you need to like have some things under your belt. You need to know what's
That's
going
right.
on. Mm-hmm. So I love this book because it's very practical in really just addressing everything as questions. And it just kind of puts some of the big issues out there that guys might be wrestling with heading into a marriage. And I think it's helpful that you guys are here to kind of help weed through some of these. So kind of the first general question I think that I want to ask is getting into like guys' heads before they're getting married. What do you think the average, I mean, because we know that women are like, oh my goodness, I found my Prince Charming and this is so fantastic and it's going to be great and I'm going to be the best wife ever because let's be honest, I just am. And I've already talked to my girlfriends for like 7 years about this and so I feel like I'm totally prepared. Mm-hmm. My guess is that most guys going into marriage kind of fall on one end of the extreme. Either they think, you know, oh yeah, I can totally do this, whatever, how hard can it be? Or they're completely paralyzed by fear. So what do you think, like, what's the average guy's concept of moving into marriage as a newlywed and what he has to deal with? What are the big rocks?
Well, I'd say one of the things that guys begin to feel is a sense of feeling grown up, you know, depending on their age. Some guys are getting married for the first time in their 30s and they're already there. Mm-hmm. But for many of the young guys in their early 20s, this is a step towards feeling like they're stepping into the realm of their parents. They're becoming grown up. A lot of expectations wrapped up in it. Mm-hmm. For many of the guys, they'll say, oh, now I get to have fun and enjoy this time with my best friends. Some of them don't look at it that way. They say, well, it's going to be, you know, what's about to happen? They don't know, and they're completely paralyzed, like you said. Mm-hmm. And I think a common thing that they're looking forward to is a sexual relationship, a relationship of being able to maybe go hiking or go on trips together, things like that. Anything that...
Going hiking and having sex.
Yeah.
On the same date.
probably not in that order.
Okay.
the sex before the hiking. One of the things that happens is that I think that sometimes guys enter marriage like thinking that it's kind of like still being single, but we're together. Mm-hmm. And they don't make that transition. It's a very, very different type of relationship. And that first year is incredibly important to be able to bond with, as Danny said, your best friend, and to really focus in on that the first year, that would be tremendously important.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by single but together?
Well, what happens is that, okay, well, nothing changes. Okay, we're living together now, we're married, but I still have my same friends, I'm still at my same job, I'm still going out with the guys, I'm still doing things exactly the same way as I was doing a week before I was married. But really, it needs to be a transition point. It's like, okay, things have really switched here. I have made a promise. I have made a commitment. And that all starts with bonding with this person that I've just committed my life to.
Well, I think Gary Thomas has said in one of his books, I believe, maybe Sacred Marriage, that it takes about 10 years in his research, 10 years for the brain to really come into the concept that there's two people instead of one. So maybe is that what you're referring to then?
Yeah, and the whole idea is, well, what is the idea of marriage? Well, it's two to become one. And sometimes we think it's, well, I really need to be independent, but it's really an interdependence. So we're actually forming a new type of entity, a new person. And sometimes I think what guys do is they continue living the same way that they lived when they were single. And, oh, by the way, I'm also married. Mm-hmm. And really you want to focus on bonding, making two people becoming one.
And that's a lifetime process.
That's a lifetime process, exactly. Yeah.
So, and I think it's, I mean, in one sense, it's kind of daunting when you think of 10 years and you're like, oh my goodness, that's a long haul, you know, to consider that I have to work towards that. But it's also a little bit freeing in thinking that, wow, okay, so it's good. I don't have to be, you know, husband extraordinaire after the first 2 weeks and all of a sudden be like, yeah, I totally get you and I totally, you know, see what's going on here.
And, you know, one interesting thing to add to that, Lisa, I would say that something that probably is common out there, it's just a thought and a concept, is that women tend to be emotional managers of the relationship. They really want things to feel a certain way. And many times the men enter relationships with insecurities or just with a real low tolerance to any negativity. Mm. And with good intentions, right there at the beginning, the guy's new bride may say, hey, you know, you're not helping with this, or I'd really like it if you did this. And he takes it as a criticism, and he shuts down. And all of a sudden, you have this stonewalling from the guy that just basically divides the attachment, as James was referring to. And it'd be really good for guys to know that up front, that women are not trying to criticize or to take away their ego, mm-hmm. but they're actually just trying to manage the emotions to make the relationship better. Mm-hmm. So they can be contributors to that once they realize that.
Yeah, the thing is that it's, you think of control and connection. As Danny was talking about, is that a guy might perceive that is control. She's trying to control me, but really what she's looking for is connection. Mm-hmm. And she wants to be in the relationship, maybe control too. But that's a topic for another conversation.
Yeah. So let's back up a little bit and talk about maybe that engagement period and moving towards marriage. What would you say, you know, for a lot of the guys there, you know, they decide they're going to marry this girl, they pick out a ring somehow, you know, and get that done. what do you guys think about that whole process of incorporating the family, like asking her dad for her hand? You know, what should that look like? How, even speaking from, you know, being on the other side of that, what does that mean for the father? You know, what are kind of some of the important things to consider there?
You want to tackle this one first?
Well, sure. Okay. The simple answer is yes. I mean, where are we going? We're going for connection. We're going for relationship. We're going for family, and that would be a matter of respect. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I love your daughter. You know, I've got things planned out as best we can. We really talked this thing through, and I really love her, and I really want to marry her. And so I really want to ask for her hand in marriage. It may seem a little archaic, but really what you're doing is I really value you, and you're communicating that to your father-in-law. And that can be really helpful because he probably knows your wife better than you do and can really encourage the marriage process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a real intimidating thing for a young guy to go into that. And I think it'd be good to speak to the potential father-in-laws that they should treat that as a not as a right or expecting the son-in-law to be a certain way, the potential son-in-law, but to look at that as a very respectable and admirable thing if a guy's willing to put himself in such a vulnerable spot. Because in reality, the guy's about to wet his pants right there, right? I mean, he's like, oh, I'm just totally, totally scared. But I remember a recent case, a guy that was planning on getting married in his 20s, went to his potentially future father-in-law, and this dad told him to put off planning his practice. It was going to be a medical practice, and he said, "If you want my daughter's hand, you need to wait on this, and to make sure you don't plan these things until after you've gotten married." And so he put some demands there, which puts him in a very tricky situation, because it's basically you do this or you don't have my daughter's hand, and that really put him in an awkward situation. So the dads need to see how they manage this as well. But as guys go into this respecting that situation with the potential bride's dad, and really looking at that as an honor to be able to ask for that hand. But as you go in, making sure you have an idea of why you want to do this, why you want this relationship with this woman, just express that heart to this dad, and it should go fine.
And another thing about that, Lisa, is that this relationship with your fiance's father should have been built over time. And so in one way, it is challenging. It has some boldness. But you just don't come at that with not having a relationship. It's not like, oh, gosh, you're my fiance's, father. It's so good to meet you today. Oh, by the way, I want to marry her. I mean, obviously, that doesn't make sense. So it's really building the relationship. One thing just personally in my marriage that was just excellent is that my wife, her name is Carol, Carol's parents and my parents knew each other well, and that was a gift. I didn't know that at that time, but it was really a gift to us, a newly married couple, and we were married at 21, and it was such a gift that these parents were really committed to us in the relationship. So I really knew Carol's father well. I had been over to the home many, many times. And that was a very, very helpful situation.
That's good. So I think a lot of guys maybe have the perspective of, okay, I asked her dad. He said, okay. I asked her. She said, yes. I put the ring on her finger. And now there's kind of like this little breathing room. But that lasts for about 3 seconds before they realize, oh my goodness, okay, now there's premarital counseling now if we hadn't done pre-engagement, or maybe we tack that on as well. And obviously then there's moving into marriage in general. How can a guy really take the lead on looking ahead for some of those preparatory things, like in premarital counseling and beginning to talk to pastors and beginning to establish, okay, if we're not in the same church right now, what is that going to look like? Just some of those spiritual leadership roles.
Yeah, one question I'd have for the guys, sometimes I'll say, well, maybe we don't need that, but why not? Why not get wisdom before you enter the most important relationship of your life? And it's really good to gather as much wisdom and perspective and life experience as possible to really start off on the right foot and to deal with some of the expectations and things that could come up, and knowing how to prepare for those. You can't always be 100% prepared. But certainly it will get you talking about the things you need to be talking about. So premarital work, just getting on, they can call the phone line here at Focus on the Family, 1-800-A-FAMILY, and the counseling department will give them referrals to some counselors, or they can check with their pastor there at the church. Certainly would be a thing that I would recommend to look for that premarital counseling.
Yeah, the question is, how good of a start do you want? And if you want an excellent start, you can put things in. Premarital counseling is one. Taking counseling classes or marriage prep classes through your church would be another. very different. Usually when they go through churches, they're really subject-oriented, topical. Premarital counseling is more specific to the couple. Another thing that I've seen in some churches is that they will actually assign a mentor couple to that couple, mm-hmm. 6 months to a year before that couple is married, and then that mentor couple will follow them the first year of marriage. So the question becomes, how good of a start do you want? Do you want a so-so start, 10-point scale? Do you want about a 2? Well, then don't do anything. If you want an 8, 9, or 10, then do everything that you can to have a good start.
Mm, good. Mm-hmm. Is there, just kind of a little fun caveat question here, is there a good way to do a bachelor party? Is there? I know.
I think there is.
Yeah. Danny's really an expert in that area.
You plan them? You can plan them for guys?
Yeah, that's just good. Have a little planning. I should open up.
Danny actually has a business. That's
good. I would say you can just finding something fun to do with your friends while you're still single, but in celebration that you're going to be married, rather than looking at this as the final single day and mm-hmm. what wild thing can you do. Looking at it as a celebration that you're going to be married, but you can still enjoy a good time with your friends as a single guy. Mm-hmm. Maybe finding a really good movie you want to see, or going bowling. Just something maybe out of the ordinary that's just fun, mm-hmm. but not something that will damage the relationship or something you have to kind of hide.
Or regret.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think another thing is that, this may sound a little weird, but, the guys in your wedding should be guys that are spiritually oriented. Mm-hmm. So it's like a get together, have a good time, and then pray over this guy. Pray a blessing over him, the relationship, and the marriage. And, I know that sounds a little hokey, but again, where are you heading? I mean, how good of a start do you want? And if you can have these guys that care for you, they care for your wife to be, they're committed, they want to help you out. It's kind of like a team meeting, we're going to pray you into this thing, we're going to bless you, and we're here with you. And again, I think the fun is important, but you can, fun and being serious and blessing are not mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm. Good. What, getting into guys' heads and just from the guys that you've talked to, whether in life or through counseling or whatever, mm-hmm. what are probably the top three, maybe say, biggest fears that guys have going into their first year of marriage? What do they really feel that they're going to fail at, or they're not going to be prepared for, or?
Probably the emotional need that their wife is going to have. Being able to meet that need of communication, of emotions that a girl has, being able to provide financially for the home, mm-hmm. I would say. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is just anticipation of the unknowns that could come up. I'd say those are probably the top three that I would know mm-hmm. with guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would really agree with that. I think another thing is, it's kind of an aside, is just being aware. I didn't know until a couple years after Carol and I were married that the first couple years were very difficult for her. I was having a great time. I mean, I thought marriage was the cool. I had married my best friend. I'd known her since junior high. And this was cool. I was living with my best friend, and it wasn't, until a couple years later into the marriage that she sat down and said, this has really been rough, and I would probably run home. Except my parents weren't in town, and so just to be really, really in touch, I think is.
So, looking back on that, James, why do you think you weren't in touch? Like, what did you miss?
I was going to graduate school. I was really busy. I probably was overly involved with friends. I just, once again, kind of how we started this thing, is I thought being married was just like being single, but only you're living with somebody.
Yeah.
And I didn't make that transition.
Okay.
And I didn't know that until later.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, important thing, I think, is going to be a commitment to repair instead of being right. I remember a time when my wife and I, she had won a cruise, and we were on a cruise where your expectation is you just enjoy, everybody's having fun, they're laughing, there's just a liveliness to the boat. But the reality is people still have relationships to deal with. And I remember my wife and I, we got upset at each other, and we were getting ready to go to I think it was like, I don't know, some dinner thing on the cruise, and we didn't want to talk. And I laid on the bed and I go, you know, the only people that are going to be involved on whether or not we have a good marriage is she or I, both of us together. So we can either have a good marriage or a bad marriage. And it's up to me to take some leadership here. So I had to swallow my pride completely and my expectation that she should take some ownership of the wrong. And I just went up to her and said, you know what? I want to have a good marriage. I'm sorry. And just those words began a time of repairing. And the quicker I went to repair, the easier it was to receive the gift of forgiveness and then move forward. And it made sense to do so. And from that time forward, I've been trying to be as intentional as possible of whether, if there's a stalemate, that I take the leadership role in repairing instead of trying to be right. Because the relationship's more important than me being right and comfortable.
Yeah. So what are some reasonable expectations for the first year of marriage? Obviously, James was oblivious, so he sailed through the first two. So that was pretty easy for him. Yeah. But looking for the guys that are struggling, and you know, I think another fear that I've heard echoed from some guys is, what if I 3 months in I find out that she wasn't the woman I thought she was, or that she changed, or that she just this fear of, you know, I don't know, being sold a bill of goods or something. I don't know. It's just weird, like, that they think that all of a sudden the person's going to change, or they'll find out things about that person, and, you know, now they've committed to this person. What should that first year look like as you're really getting to know that other person and making that transition?
I just have a comment on that's really funny. That's what you usually hear from women. Huh. I really didn't know who this guy was. Guys tend to be pretty well pleased, basically. Mm-hmm. The big thing that comes up is this whole thing with control and connection that we touched on earlier, is that, you know, would you do this for me? I'd like you to do this. Guys really tend to see that. Again, they're kind of still individuals at this point. And so they're saying, well, wait a minute, you're not going to control me, whether or not they say it or not. That's kind of what they feel. No, you know, I'll do what I want to do, you know. You aren't going to tell me what to do. But really, in a healthy relationship, what your spouse is asking for is, let's do this together. Let's connect up. Let's work this out practically. So that's one thing to really be aware of. And then obviously we could get into listening, but that's a whole nother subject to really, listening well.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, they've found in studies that testosterone for a guy goes up way high. And so the way a guy handles it is either he blows off the handle towards that comment that his wife has made, or he just shuts down and is totally quiet. And a lot of women really take offense to that. The guy walks away, but their testosterone's oozing so much, so you don't want to pursue that. But the guy needs to know, okay, my testosterone's up. What am I going to do about this? It's not her fault. She's going towards a relationship, so learning how to manage that. I'd say one of the big expectations that I've gotten in my office is, you know, I expected we were going to have sex more often. Mm-hmm. You know, they had an expectation of frequency rather than relationship. And the woman goes, you know, I'm okay with the frequency we have. He's not. There's a level of dissatisfaction that first year as they're adjusting to their interests sexually. And I think that's one that you need to talk openly. You know, what's affecting the relationship sexually? What were your expectations and what drove those expectations? Was there pornography in the past? Was there a lot of several sexual relationships that are affecting your perception of how sex is supposed to be in marriage? I think that those are important things that guys many times don't talk about with mentors or with men or with their wives. See, they just keep it inside, and then they just explore different things and they get themselves in trouble.
I think I remember being in a forum one time where they threw out that question, and it was guys, most guys in the group were saying that their expectation was every day, and the women were like, I don't know, like 3 or 4 times a month.
Yeah, some of them will say, I'm good with once a month, you know? Yeah.
And then it was like, whoa, I guess we're not on the same page here. So that was pretty fascinating. So what about for, you know, keeping on that theme, like guys who are going into marriage and maybe have some fear, insecurity around that, because there's obviously the cultural expectation that you're going into marriage just being a, you know, Mac daddy kind of, right, you're the expert and stuff. And for guys that have remained sexually pure, that's going to not be the case. And there may be some fears around that. Or for ones who are pulling in stuff from their past where they don't know if those ghosts of girlfriends past are going to be kind of, you know, rearing their heads and what that's going to look like. How do you manage expectations in light of that?
Well, a man and a woman, they're designed to attach emotionally and physically and spiritually. Mm-hmm. And women are very much equipped to attach emotionally. I mean, they're designed that way. The oxytocin, everything is wired to happen that way. The physical side, they kind of have to work towards that through the emotional attachment. For a man, they work through the physical attachment and they get to the emotional attachment that way. But they're wired to initially attach physically. And sometimes that gets kind of skewed with experience. But if they realize that they're really, their intention internally is to want to attach, then they need to take the emotional side and learn from their wife on what that looks like so that there's a complete attachment between them. And it sounds a little cheesy, but it actually makes sense, because then you have true sex. You have true intimacy, because it's intimacy. I heard this once said that it's into me see. And if you both see into each other where you're serving one another, either sexually or emotionally, spiritually, then, wow, you have a really powerful time where a woman is able to give of herself physically. Mm-hmm. Because that's how they were designed to give their bodies as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sounds a little bit to like Avatar. You know, I see you. In the Bible, especially in the old translation, it says, and so-and-so knew his wife. Mm-hmm. Well, we know what they're talking about there. They're talking about sex. And I think, as Danny was talking about, that physical connection for guys, and we're talking about healthy guys now, that physical connection that leads them into that emotional. And I think that's one thing for women to understand, too. It is kind of a flip on that, is that guys physically move towards intimacy and then the emotional component comes out, where women generally move into that communication, that emotional intimacy, and then the physical comes out of that. It's really interesting that, you know, God's design on this, mm-hmm. and I'm sure he was smiling all the way through this, saying, you know, I really want these people to become one. And part of that is really understanding how the other person works and works well.
Mm-hmm. And you want to really agree on frequency. It's going to be comfortable for the wife, and also just communicating, say, hey, this is working for me, this is not, and being open, not letting it become a problem, but being proactive with it, not being afraid to have conflict that first year. It doesn't mean you have a bad marriage, not being afraid to go back to the counselor after 6 months, because a lot of them have the assumption that, okay, we had premarital counseling, now we're supposed to do it all right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if we go to counseling those first 6 months, then everybody's going to think we're having bad, you know, bad issues here, and that we're not doing marriage right. Actually, that'd be very wise to do after 6 months or a year, just to check up and talk openly about issues that have come up. Mm-hmm. Because they will. Yeah. They will come up.
It's interesting. Then, I had a friend who was telling about her first year of marriage, and she indicated that she didn't realize until once she was in it how difficult it was for her to transfer her love and respect from her dad to her husband. Mm. And, you know, she looked at her husband and she's like, this guy's kind of a jerk. He's not my dad. My dad is just amazing. And she had this vision of her dad as how he raised her and stuff like that. And so they, you know, definitely went into counseling. And she said it was quite a, you know, knockdown, drag out that first year, because it was really releasing a lot of those expectations and realizing that her husband at 23, 24 was not her dad at 50 something.
Right.
And there's a difference
That's
there
true.
As to, you know, maturity and what he could provide and what, you know, the wisdom that he had. and stuff like that. So to allow him to grow. So, well, as we wrap up, any other last minute tips for guys? I mean, if you were sitting down with, you know, a son or a best friend or something, and you just had 15 minutes with him, you know, you had to just go do, 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 you know, some bullet points for what does he need to know? What would you put out there?
I think that one thing is you really need to listen. You really need to focus. And so as you talk with, you know, your fiance, your wife, is it's almost taking turns. Is that okay? It's that I see you. It's that I am really going to listen carefully, try to understand how you work, and then switching it around. And so going back and forth and developing that kind of flow of really listening, really understanding, really hearing what's going on. One thing I tell guys is what you want is you want to take your wife and you want to put her in your brain so that she's in there and so that you can really get in touch what's going on with her. Some guys can be very, very good at that and that they can really learn from that. So listen carefully, really try to understand. Really do that in a very proactive way. And then, of course, you want to switch too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, learn about your unnaturals. I think the unnaturals being things you're not good at, fruits of the spirit, other things that maybe having patience, compassion, looking at the other person as someone that's more important than you, kind of in a humble way. I think I would wrap it up in a story. That I read once in Real Life Marriage. Tim and Ann Evans wrote about an experience on a cruise that they heard an old couple had saved up for their 55th anniversary to go on a cruise, their first ever. They saved up for several years. They went on the cruise. On the way out, the captain said, "Hey, how was your experience? You guys love it?" They said, "Man, that was fantastic. We loved it." They said, "You know," the wife said, "we saw these banquets and these buffets and they look fantastic, and I wish we could have enjoyed those. We brought our own food and our lunch. I wish those would be for us." And he said, "What do you mean? You guys, those were for you guys." And she said, "Really?" And he felt really bad. But I think that's how we look at, if we look at marriage and we go for the counterfeits, ways to where we bring our own lunch and we want to substitute with things to make us feel better in the temporary, not enjoy the banquet of the marriage. God has set that out there. And it's up to us to be present at the banquet table. He invites us, and that's why he created that. But our own selfishness creates us bringing our own lunch. And so maybe enjoy the banquet instead of your own lunch. Mm. Yeah,
that's good. And sometimes it takes a lot of reversal or coming out of patterns that have driven us towards, you know, that kind of behavior, I think.
Right.
And moving into marriage, you have to be willing to do the hard work of speaking truth to yourself, I think, in that and recognizing that you need to bring that into marriage too.
So. Yeah, knowing you're invited.
Yeah.
Knowing when it is, right?
Yeah.
And,
and then provided you were
going,
invited,
that's right.
Let's make sure that happened. Yeah. Good. Well, the book, or some of the elements that we've been talking about come out of the Smart Groom's Answer Guide. We are linking to it on the blog, so you guys have it. This is a bunch of info that has been provided by the Focus on the Family Counseling Department, edited by a couple of our counselors here, published by Focus on the Family. So make sure you check that out. And it's always so great when we can, you know, just bring you guys in here and pick your brains for a few minutes. So thanks so much to James and to Danny for being
part
of this.
And
good to be
helping
here,
us
Lisa.
Out. And I'm sure we'll get emails from guys now and we'll just have to start, you know, start a Q&A sesh or something where we put you guys with some of the particulars. So
yeah.
That'd be fun. So thanks
Thank
a lot.
You.
Opening up this week's inbox, and I have Candace on the phone. Hey, Candace.
Hi, Lisa.
Thanks for joining us again, because of course we have another question that pretty much only you can address here. So.
Oh, good. Those are the kinds I like the best.
Exactly. So more relationships. This is a good one, though, and a very, very interesting. So we'll see what advice you offer to this young woman. She says, "I'm a Christian woman in my early 20s, and I'm concerned about a good friend of mine in her early 30s who's also a Christian. We used to go to the same church, but she moved to another city in the state a few years ago. A few weeks ago, we had lunch, and she casually casually mentioned that she has a male roommate. I was surprised at the time, but hid my surprise and let the comment pass. I'm pretty sure her family and other friends don't know. Normally, this is something I'd leave up to parents to figure out, but both of her parents passed away nearly a decade ago. I'm assuming that no sexual immorality is going on, but still, should I bring this up with her?
Well, let's begin with Proverbs 27, verse 6, that says, "Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses." I think there's definitely precedence in the Bible to speak the truth in love, to be friendly in how you do it. My concern, though, is I think this has to happen a lot where people hide their surprise. And I don't know if there's a statute of limitations on the wounds from a friend. That's my concern, that the best opportunity to have said something has already passed. Hmm. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't say something. So for anyone who's listening who, you know, is about to come into a situation like this, take the opportunity of the first announcement of something troubling to say, whoa, wait, you just said he. Your roommate's a man? Wow, you know, how did that happen? What do your siblings think about that? Are you guys dating? I mean, just ask the questions you would ask normally. You know, I think it's a little bit hard to be normal in that situation because it is so shocking, but I think too often we complicate things by letting them go and not responding in the moment to what's been said.
Yeah, very true. And I think a lot of times we look and we say, you know, we hear something like that and we think to ourselves, seriously? You know, it's just something that we hadn't thought about before, or we just assume that none of our friends would do that or whatever, so
right.
We feel
and
kind of unprepared.
Exactly, yeah. But I think that's what she should have said.
Right.
Wow, you're living with a guy? Wow, that seems so, you know, contrary to who you were when you lived here. You know, what's changed? Has something changed? Have your beliefs changed? I mean, I think we should be a little more bold in these conversations. So that said, the window has passed now, so how do you reopen the window?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think if she's a close friend, then probably they talk a lot. And the next time they're talking and she mentions the roommate, I think you bring it up again and you say, hey, about that male roommate, you know, I've thought a lot about it, prayed about it. I'm just curious, are you guys dating? You know, and it sounds like she's going to say no, definitely not. Say, well, I'm stumbling because I think this is an awkward situation,
mm-hmm.
but wounds from a friend can be trusted. And it sounds like in this situation, maybe some gentle wounding needs to occur because she is living in a way that will give people who don't know her just cause for thinking she's living in sin. And if she is still claiming to be in Christ, then this is a problem. Scripture is clear that we're supposed to be holy because God is holy, and that we're supposed to walk in righteousness, and that we're supposed to avoid not only evil, but the appearance of evil. And I think the reason is that, one, avoiding the appearance of evil guards your reputation and also guards what people think about you as a Christian. But two, it protects you from situations where sin really is more likely to occur, situations like living with a man.
Mm-hmm.
So this won't be easy or comfortable. And so to that end, I think it's essential that you fast and pray and ask the Holy Spirit to direct the timing of this, because that really will make a huge difference. You know, if you bring it up at the right time, she may be really open to it and say, wow, you know what, you're right, and I've had a pit in my stomach and I just needed somebody to remind me why.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people just try to play a pragmatic card on it, and they just say, well, you know, obviously it's saving money. This guy's a great guy. We have no interest in one another. He's in an opposite end of the house, blah, blah, blah. But I think you have to get back to really knowing this. You know, if some people do know this, it will offend some, and that's not good. We're not to cause offense. And I think it can be a smokescreen or a difficult situation to process with our unbelieving friends, because there's many who have thrown up, you know, when they've talked to other friends of mine about that, they've said, wow, I didn't think Christians did that, or
right.
I didn't think that you would think that's okay. And, you know, I think it's helpful to maintain those boundaries in light of that.
Well, the other thing that I would ask her about is, has she lowered her standards a little bit because she's now 30.
Hmm.
Maybe what she would never have considered when she was 20 now doesn't seem quite so bad when marriage seems further and further away.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe there's something going on there where, you know, this is playing into a hope she still has, and she's starting to wonder if maybe the best she can do is have a male roommate. And that's really selling God short. you know, he is all powerful and still able to bring a husband. Mm-hmm. But I know that it's so tempting in our minds to think, well, yeah, it's kind of the Sarah scenario. Okay, Lord, you said we'd have an heir, but I'm almost 100. So, Abraham, why don't you take Hagar and do your thing and let's have a baby that way.
Yeah.
And look at the disaster, you know, that came from that. Let's encourage our friends not to bring Ishmaels into their lives.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue that I think is maybe more widely applicable to people listening is women who have female roommates who are not believers. And I think that can be just as problematic and overlooked far too easily. And I've had friends who've had roommates who aren't Christians, and I've tried to challenge them in that. But it is difficult because you are touching a very personal part of their lives, and there are often issues of, you know, sheer economics. You can't find a roommate. Suddenly you have the opportunity to have a roommate who's not a believer, and you think, well, how bad can it really be? We're both working. We won't see each other that much, and it will help me make my mortgage. And yet it really does create a difficult dynamic in the home, and this is your, you know, your refuge. This is your haven where you're supposed to be able to go and have, you know, a break from the cruel world around you. And how hard it is to have the Spirit of the Lord in your home when you're sharing your home with someone who doesn't acknowledge him as Lord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can be difficult too. And many women have had to do that, you know, in a college situation, in a dorm, or if they were assigned a roommate or whatever. But, you know, when you have the choice to do that, especially as you're trying to encourage one another and build one another up and keep one another accountable, you know, that's probably helpful.
Right. Well, it really comes down to a matter of trust. If I say no to an unbelieving roommate, male or female, and it means I'm going to be short on the rent this month, but it means I'm going to be living in obedience, can I trust that God will make up the difference?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah, I guess I haven't thought of that one before. That's interesting. I guess I hadn't thought of the unbelieving roommate situation before, but probably, you know, probably something good to think about.
Probably a lot more common. You know, I think a lot more listeners will relate to that than they will to, he's not a believer and he's a he.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if they're not dating, I mean, I think a fair number are probably living together in sin, and that's another issue for another day. But
yeah.
This
yeah.
whole platonic, we're just roommates thing, I don't see that as much. But anyway, still the same issues
yeah.
with the added layer of the sexual tension that is there, whether or not you acknowledge it. You know, men and women were made to relate a certain way.
Right.
And even if you don't find the guy attractive and think I could never marry him, there are still going to be moments where you think, oh, he's a man, I'm a woman. Wouldn't that be cozy?
Yeah, yeah. Well, good thoughts, Candace. It seems like we kind of went at this from a lot of different angles and a lot of different possibilities and potential. And again, I think it comes down to the question is being asked by the girl who is wondering if she needs to approach her friend. And I think it's good that you said, yeah. And I think that boldness is called for. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially as friends, you know, if
right.
if not from our friends, then who are we going to receive correction from and just something to think about and guidance? And so I think that's
helpful. And to, as a closing thought, fear the Lord, don't fear man.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, all right, Candace, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. As always, those of you out there, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can address your question on a future show. Until then, you can certainly go to past shows and see the questions that we've addressed, as well as looking at our Boundless Answers on the site, boundless.org, where Candace also weighs in, sometimes on in a more specific way, since she has the paper to do it. So those are the ones where she really gets into it. Yeah. So make sure that you check those out from her and from John Thomas as well. So that is it for this week's show. We want to see you around next week. But until then, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.